It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Yes, it is a lovely morning, isn't it?
Now, more of the Morning Shift
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's 7 o'clock this hour, brought to you by Zero Res. Smart, lasting, clean. We are back here on the Morning Shift. Mike, Bo, and Tiff here with you live in the Kia Studios. And you're still wanting the music to play? Is that what I'm hearing? You're jamming out over there?
Yeah. I love it when we come back with a little rock at 7 a.m. A little. I want to get woke up. I mean, that's kind of like for me. I like getting just hit with hard stuff, hit music-wise. You know, that's what...
That's why you listen to on your way in with the windows down?
Yeah, I do have the windows down. I even have that sliding glass.
Not the back one.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Well, I do it a quarter. That way it kind of puts a nice little current through the truck.
You put the sunroof down too?
I don't have a sunroof. I drive a truck.
Trucks do come with sunroofs.
I know, but not mine.
My truck is bigger than Bo's, and it has a sunroof. So I don't know what he's talking about. And I like the sunroof.
I wanted to say something so bad, but I want to keep this.
Go ahead, Tiff. Let it eat.
Let
it out.
No, unfiltered, Tiffany.
Not going to go there. I'm just going to say, you guys, competing on who's got the bigger truck. So
that's right.
I mean, cool. You guys do you know?
Oh, it's okay. I mean, we can hook bumpers. I'll lose. That diesel. He's got a diesel in his. I ain't messing with that.
I don't know what that even means.
You never heard that?
No.
Oh yeah, that's a Pawling County thing where you hook bumpers.
That's right.
You've never heard this. You literally put a strap on each bumper and you see who can pull the other truck. It's like a tow. Yeah. Yeah, you guys not know this.
I did not come back for this.
We need to cut that one up.
Yeah. I cannot believe you've never heard of hooking bumpers. Shows who's got the more power.
Man, stop. I'm not going to let you just keep saying that on air.
Man, y'all got some weird minds. I don't know where y'all are going with this, but it's a supremacy thing truck-wise.
We're going to
who got the stronger truck?
We're going to talk about Georgia. Get it together here.
It's truck tug-of-war.
Okay. All right. Georgia taking out Clemson 34-3 on Saturday. And we talked about this a little bit earlier, but Nate Frazier, you got your freshman running back going out there, putting in work, finishing with 83 yards, 11 carries, and a touchdown, really stepping up big for this team because they were without
ETN.
So, yeah, Nate Frazier stepping it up. And Kirby Smart, you know, maybe your coach, and as a coach and player, you guys have some different takes on how you want to do things and how you want to perform in a game. Well, Kirby talked about how he saw some things in practice from Frazier that he didn't necessarily like, and he shared his thoughts about it and what resulted in the game.
I get on him all the time because he's out of control. He is just foot fire, moving, going at the speed of light, doesn't know he might run into a brick wall, cutting back, and he cut back a couple times in practice, and I told him, I said, when you get in a real game, you cut back like that, they're going to light you up. You know, I might actually said some things I can't say in here, but he cut back and went all the way across the field for about 50, and I told him, it's okay now. So he could do that.
That's Kirby doing his own man up segment.
Yeah, that's a good pull. I've been very hard on. I'm gonna talk about Kirby for a quick second before we get to how amazing Frazier was, who was by a lot of people, from what I heard, the star of their the start of their fall camp. But you know, Kirby came in into a program that was ready to win, to me. And he got them to the national title game after the year one, in second year. And then they kind of struggled a little bit to kind of figure out what they were going to do and how they were going to win it. You can't say enough good things about how he's running that program. He is in complete control of every phase, which is what he wants to be. And you can tell that he's having fun, and those players are having fun with Kirby and how he coaches and treats them. And I think you can't say enough about that. But Trevor Etienne,
yeah,
you might want to keep your stuff together from now on, because if you don't, you could find yourself playing second fiddle, because this team is as talented at running back as they are everywhere else. And Nate Frazier showed that.
I think it was really interesting watching that, too, because Nate Frazier, and I think Greg McElroy actually did a good job on the broadcast of mentioning this. He talked about how this is like DeAndre Swift 2.0. I mean, he runs like DeAndre Swift, and he rides the wave kind of like DeAndre Swift. And what I mean is that he does a good job of, like, kind of hiding behind blockers, letting his blocker clear guys out in the second level and the third level and into the secondary, and just kind of weaves back and forth, just kind of rides the wave, you know, kind of like he's surfing behind those big linemen. I thought he did that numerous times. And you look at the running back spot, like you said, I mean, some of these guys that were getting carries, and I'll use Robinson as an example. Robinson, 7 attempts for 12 yards, wasn't all the same situation, but Nate Frazier, 11 carries for 83, like Tiff said a minute ago. It's insane, and that's what you expect behind this offensive line. Now, you would think Etienne plugging back in, maybe a more well-rounded back at this point in terms of picking up blitzes and everything else, but like you said, I don't think you want to miss another game. And Kirby Smart was kind of asked about Etienne afterwards, and he was like, it's not a guarantee that this guy's back week two. I mean, he's kind of got to do some things and make sure he's pointing it in the right direction. So, man, just impressive overall for that run game and the passing game. A lot of playmakers around for Georgia.
There were a lot of playmakers out there for USC as well. They beat LSU. So the 23rd ranked team, USC, beat number 13 LSU on the road 27-20. Now, after the game, this made its rounds. LSU coach Brian Kelly, very animated after the loss.
We're sitting here again talking about the same things, about not finishing when you have an opponent in a position to put them away. But what we're doing on the sideline is feeling like the game's over. And I'm so angry about it that I got to do something about it. I'm not doing a good enough job as a coach. And I got to coach him better, because it's unacceptable for us not to have found a way to win this football game. It's ridiculous.
Now, you may have heard a thump while he was talking. That was Brian Kelly right when he started going, pounding his fist on the table.
Well, I think Brian Kelly needs to look in the mirror. And I know he did when he said it with us as coaches, but he needs to look in the mirror first of all. Stop chasing points early in games on neutral site fields against good opponents. He did the same crap last year, and he turned around and started this game exactly like he did against FSU. In last year, it was Jaden Daniels. They go right down the field against Florida State, and they get stopped inside the red zone and on a fourth and goal. And he does it again this year. I know it's just 3 points, but at the end of this game, there was a moment where 3 points could have been everything. And you just got to stop doing this, because you got to look at yourself.
Yeah, no, I agree with you from a football perspective for sure. But let me ask y'all this: Did y'all believe him? When he punched the table, like, did you believe that was his actual?
I think
that was a natural reaction to where he was mentally. I don't see it.
Do you plot that?
Coaches do for sure. They're like, man, what am I going to sound like when I have to go in and answer all these questions? You know what? I'm going to get animated. I'm going to punch the table.
Well, that's where your PR.
Get out of here, dude.
There are some guys that are naturally like just fired up and stuff after a game. So I don't.
I believe
you know,
he is.
I think
it was Brian Kelly. This is my opinion only, but Brian Kelly, from what I've seen from him, is incredibly fake at times. He talked with his southern fake accent, you know. So that's why I think the contrived thing can be done. But I guarantee you, and you've been in these situations, but I've been in these behind the scenes situations enough throughout my years doing, you know, covering games where there's a PR guy or an SID, and they've got a note card, and they're telling you what they've seen. Hey, you know what? fans are not happy, and I guarantee the SID was like, man, this, you know, Brian
but not,
probably
not
asked
in
the polls.
That moment after the game, that's not happening.
Yeah, but
that
he's
stuff
already,
happens during the week. Like,
he's already met with that guy before he goes to that press conference. He's already met with that guy, and Brian Kelly's like, well, I got to act pissed off.
I'm going to tell you, as a player, even in college, I used to have those meetings right before I would walk in and talk to a reporter.
And I'm not saying the note. Bo mentioned about fans being angry. You're not necessarily doing that in that moment there.
I think you are.
But I think you're prepping them for what questions they might be asked based on maybe, okay, hey, this was on Twitter. People are commenting on how you were behaving on the sideline. Get ready for a question about that. I think it's very much more in the moment.
I just found him so, like, unbelievable. Like, I just I'm not saying it's all an act, but it was very much, I got to go in here and pound the table at some point, literally, and get animated and make sure people understand that I know this is not okay. And that's what it felt like. Because it's not okay. And look, man, LSU fans, they're not going to be good with it. You lose, you know, to an opening game to a USC, especially in a place like Las Vegas, when you had, you know, videos coming out of these guys taking over, you know, casinos and playing every instrument, drinking the bar out of whatever liquor they had. The whole thing's a party until you lose with 8 seconds to go and they score a touchdown. And then Brian Kelly's like, I got to get red-faced. I got to get mad. I got to send a message. It just seemed dry to me, dude. Yeah. It just seemed fake and contrived. I don't need that.
If you're a player,
dude,
and you see that from your coach after a game, what are you thinking?
I don't think I would believe him, to be honest with you. Like, we've already had these conversations. Were you pounding a locker when you're in the locker room? Maybe. I don't believe 15 minutes later when you go to the podium that it's worth pounding the lectern up there and getting all angry again. And I'm sure that was the message. I'm sure everything he said was the exact message he gave the team. But when I look at it from a player's point of view, I would look at it and go, yeah, dude, I don't know. And I don't know, to be honest with you, in this day and age, when we've talked about this, I don't know how well players, especially defensively, line up with him. When their guy's in the transfer portal, he hasn't done well. I would say that a lot of it might come back to the fact that when you meet with Brian Kelly, he doesn't seem like the kind of guy that builds relationships like you need this day and age in college football. Just doesn't, man.
Yeah, I think that you could be right about one side of the ball. I think offensively, if I'm an offensive player, like a wide receiver, running back, even definitely a quarterback, Brian Kelly's the kind of guy I want to play for because he's able to showcase your traits. Defensively, it doesn't seem like he's doing very well in the portal.
Braves and Phillies in extra innings with so much at stake. We'll recap that matchup. And we're going in the huddle when we come back here on the morning shift on a week one as we get set for the NFL on Sunday. Stay with us here on Sports Radio 99, The Game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
On this is the morning shift.
Make some noise!
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
2-2, and that ball driven to right center field. Castellanos is looking at it. This one's high enough. And it is gone! Michael Harris took a home run away last night, and he hits one tonight. Atlanta leads it 1-0.
That was the ESPN call of that game with Carl Ravage. On the call, and yeah, the Braves, it was a tough one. 11 innings, they lose 3-2 to the Phillies on Sunday night.
That seemed like the last thing that went well for the Atlanta Braves was the Michael Harris home run. Man, just a number of gut punches throughout Sunday, but it's a microcosm, man. Coming away, and I know that we've had, you know, 48 hours or a little bit less to react because it's Tuesday morning because we had Labor Day, but I'm still coming off this weekend asking questions about the Braves going, what does the future hold? Because things are very tight in the wild card race, and it going into the weekend, I'm like, can we catch the Phillies in the East? And now coming out of the weekend, I'm going, are they even going to make it into the playoffs after losing 3 of 4? It just seems like this conversation is inevitable. And I know that I've been the one on this show between me and Bo that is a little bit more negative about the Atlanta Braves. But golly, man, it just seems like there's just so little to get excited about in some of these games here recently.
Yeah, you won five. Well, just this. I mean, let's.
It's just a series. You're right. It's just a series.
So yeah. Look, you had won five straight series. I think you'd won like 12 of 16. And now you would kind of separate yourself a little bit with the Mets. You play the Phillies, the Mets play the White Sox. They're now a half a game out. The Cubs are only 3.5 behind the Braves, but the Braves are only 3.5 behind the Padres, and 2.5. You see where my mind's at now with football season here, and the Diamondbacks. So that rate is basically 3.5 games separate, you know, the Braves from being back in that top wild card spot. There is still a lot. You got the Rockies in town starting tonight. Now you need to get back on track. The reality is, though, is this series this weekend or last weekend just showed you the margin of error for where you're at missing all of these players with a team that's not missing guys like that, which is the Phillies. You know, you can't make the little mistakes. You can't have the bases loaded in the ninth inning and not put a ball in play. Those are unacceptable things when you're trying to win games, make the playoffs, win a division, or just overcome injuries like you've sustained this year.
It just seems like the margin of error with the offense you have right now is so slim. And you look at like the outing from Spencer Schwellenbach, so good. And you had the small slip up, and then it's like, dude, the offense can't have your back. It seems like such a wash. It's so frustrating. I feel bad. Honestly, I feel bad for the pitching staff. I'm starting to get that way.
Because you're sitting here, Mike, and you're saying, why couldn't we have this type of pitching staff last year when we had everybody on the roster having a career year offensively? It just doesn't seem fair, and I can understand Atlanta fans, like, why can't we ever get both of them together? You know, it just is how it is. Reality is the pitching staff should be heralded and celebrated because, you know, if Schwellenbach doesn't go out there and have the performance he does last night, two nights ago, then you're not even in the game. Yeah. I mean, you're blown out again. So it's crazy. I mean, you look at Max Fried. I think he pitched Saturday, if I'm not mistaken. Gave up what, two, three runs and went almost seven innings. Dude. It was essentially a quality. Max Fried gave you a quality start, and you felt like you were never in the game. Michael Harris makes one of the greatest catches that this city has ever seen. And yet, you never felt like you were in the game. It just felt like the whole time you were fighting uphill, and you were never going to get back up it.
Let's go in the huddle.
It's time to huddle up.
Bring it in close! Bring it in close!
The latest NFL news, rumors, reports, and happenings.
With In the Huddle on the Morning Shift.
49ers receiver Ricky Pearsall is fortunate to be alive after a scary incident that happened to him over the weekend. And so he was released from the hospital on Sunday morning, less than 24 hours after he was shot in the chest. Now, his mother posted on social media on Sunday that her son had been shot in the chest with the bullet exiting his back and missing vital organs. Now, before the shooting, he had participated in an autograph signing event at Union Square in San Francisco. So just
terrifying.
Scary.
Terrifying and incredible that if you saw the images Adam Schefter had posted on his Instagram, I think probably tweeted out too, of right after the shooting, he is standing up, walking with paramedics and officers to the ambulance. So I can't even fathom what those moments must have been like for him. But the fact that he was even upright and able to walk to the ambulance is incredible.
Shows you how tough he is. I know there was a struggle and there was an attempted robbery and the robber was shot too. It's a wild story.
Shot him. Yeah, that is the attempted robbery suspect.
Unbelievable. But you know what? Ricky Pearsall is a tough dude. I think you just saw that.
Yeah.
Because hopefully this doesn't derail his season. Remember, wasn't it Brian Robinson Jr.?
Yeah,
that was shot right before. I mean, I think like the weekend before too, or something like that.
Yeah, that's exactly. And I remember talking about this. I actually had one of my teammates. This happened too in college, right before we opened. Maybe 4 days before we opened with Virginia Tech, he was sitting in his car in Tuscaloosa We opened Virginia Tech in Atlanta that year. He was sitting in his car in Tuscaloosa. Brandon Dederick was the D lineman. He guy sticks the gun in the window. He grabs the guy's arm. Gun goes off. It went through his forearm and into his hip. And he actually ended up playing 4 days later against Virginia Tech. It was the craziest thing ever. And I remember lining up against him in one-on-one later that week, and he has, like, a scab that just looks like a cigarette burn or something. Like, that's a straight-up bullet wound. I'm looking at that guy's arm right now. Like, that is unreal. And it's just terrifying. You know, sometimes these headlines come across the screen, and you kind of get lost in whatever you're watching, and, you know, the bottom line will pop up and go yellow or red. This is one that you were like, what? Like, oh, my gosh, man. Ricky Pearsall, because we've talked a lot about him on this show, man.
Yeah.
Man, he is just terribly lucky. Unbelievable.
Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase, his availability remains up in the air. And we are on the cusp of the season opener coming, and it definitely looming. Coach Zach Taylor said Chase remained day-to-day as he continues to not practice while he awaits the status of a contract extension. So he was seen at practice again in street clothes. So he's attending, not participating, but his presence is there. Now, Taylor said there will be contingencies in place to account for the fluid situation involving the Pro Bowler. This was according to ESPN. He said there are always injuries and things you have to deal with, so we'll adapt to him. So we'll see what that means. We'll see what ends up taking place. But
this is I understand the hold in and everything, but the reports they're talking, the way they're talking about it, it's almost like there's something else wrong with him, but I know there's not. I know it's just him wanting a new contract, not wanting to play. It's just a little odd the way it's playing out. I don't know if he plays. Is he going to play? If he plays, so, how's that going to look?
So Taylor said he did not want to speculate on how much Chase could play Sunday given the lack of practice reps. This is if he's even going to play on Sunday. But he said, it's impossible for me to say 100%. With 100% conviction, but I feel good about the shape that he is in.
The shape is fine. He's not running a marathon, right? It's not a triathlon. It's more about
the timing for me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is go get your practice in, go get your reps in. I don't need to know that you're in great shape. I'm hopefully most of them are in great shape, right? I mean, and that's not going to be a worry for him, but. This is an offense that started off very slow last year. Even before Burrow's injury, this is an offense that started off very, very slow. And so you don't want to see those same things kind of come around. At the same time, they're playing New England, so I guess that's probably a good thing. You know, they're starting off like New England, not very good. And we're lucky to have Matthew Judon.
Go ahead and clip that, Dylon, just in case you guys need that for Man Up After the Week. Tiffany
likes this segment so much. She's going to have you collecting audio like daily. Yeah. Like, you know, go ahead and snag that.
I'm here for
it. It can only be like 5 or 6 minutes. If it can't be the whole show, I'm having a man up.
Like I said, man, this is an offense that started very slow. I think they're lucky that this is – every coach, though, and you guys know this, every coach has their, like, cutoff during the week. If you didn't get this in, you're not playing. I'd be curious to see what Zach Taylor's is. You know, maybe it's a Tuesday or Wednesday thing, but you got to start looking – you got to start looking ahead at some point if you're this offense.
Well, when you look at the Steelers, that is who the Falcons will play on Sunday in their season opener. And a quarterback, Russell Wilson, will be a team captain. So he was selected to be one of four for the 2024 season. And his teammates are calling him a strong leader that brings in veteran experience. So he, just got to this team 7 months ago.
Yeah.
And now has inserted himself as a team captain on the Steelers.
Let's ride.
Yeah, he's the starting quarterback as well.
Yeah, he's going to have all the other captains come to his private office that he has that he's set up by himself.
I don't think he's getting that Pittsburgh.
I kid. Maybe he shares it with Arthur Smith. No, I'm kidding. But look, I think most teams want their quarterback to be the captain. I think it's a no-brainer that Russell Wilson is he's the starting quarterback. The problem for me, or the thing for me, what I would say is what's going to happen if things don't go well and he gets benched for Justin Fields. Is he going to? Are we going to transfer that C? Is that captain C on your jersey just for the starting quarterback, or is this Russell Wilson's for the rest of the season?
That's a good question.
Because how that situation will be handled. And how he handles it if he is the captain and he is benched could prove a lot about his future in the league.
I saw it last year. I had the Broncos week one, and then I had them in their final game of the season. So when things were good and when things were bad, I can tell you Russell was still, in that last game of the season when Jarrett Stidham got the start, still active on the sidelines, still went through his normal pregame routine. And I did get that quote from him right before the game, which was, you know, how are you still, how are you approaching this game now that you're not a starter? And he said, I'm going to approach it the same way I have for the last, 200-plus starts in the NFL. So still carrying that confidence.
He's going to get benched, you know, at some point. And it's not going to be his fault, in my opinion. I think it's an Arthur Smith problem, that offensive line. And nothing about that offense is set up for what Arthur Smith wants to do. And I think Russell Wilson will be the fall guy. I'll go to Justin Fields week 6 or 7. And you'll have to ride that wave for a little bit if you're a Steelers fan. I'm not saying they won't even win this weekend. They might. But at some point, he'll probably get benched because of Arthur Smith.
But they got Cordarrelle Patterson and Scotty Miller.
Stay with us here on The Morning Shift. Later on in the show, we are giving away a pair of tickets to Atlanta United's home match versus Inter Miami on Wednesday, September 18th at Mercedes-Benz Stadium at 7:30. Tickets are on sale now at atlutd.com. But again, stay with us here on The Morning Shift, and I will tell you when to call in. Coming up next, let's talk about the ceiling and the floor for all 32 NFL teams. Mike's going to get into that.
Yeah, also got a mic'd up on the heels of that as well. Tiff, we'll talk more college football. I'll tell you my top five, because it is a top five Tuesday, top five biggest takeaways from college football over the weekend. Stick with us here on The Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Morning Shift
with Tiffany, Mike, and Bo on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. Don't you love predictions this time of year?
I know you
get
do too.
Set to embark on that.
you're the wait and see type, but it's
prediction season. I don't like I don't do predictions, but I like other people's predictions, and I like when their predictions are wrong sometimes. Sometimes like it more when it happens to be you guys.
I could have predicted that.
What Tiffany's trying to say is if you missed the 620 Man Up segment, make sure you go back to the Odyssey
app. Make sure you go back. Yeah. We were looking at a Jeff Kerr's article on CBSSports.com, and it breaks down the ceiling and the floor for all 32 NFL teams. So when you look at your Atlanta Falcons, he has the ceiling as them being 11-6 and winning the NFC South. The floor, 8-9, missing the playoffs.
I think it's fair, right? I think that's probably a fair number. My question would be, and Bo, you're a perfect person to answer this. If they go 8-9, if the Falcons go 8-9, barring like a catastrophic injury situation, what is your feeling headed into next offseason at 8-9 and missing the playoffs?
No one's getting fired. So
no,
don't want to hear any of that. I think it's going to be a tough offseason in that aspect. And I think it's going to be a tough July and August and for a lot of people when 2025 gets here. My point is it's going to be hard to sell people. And it's going to be hard to get the fan base kind of on board, because they're going to see Terry Fontenot's fourth year and the year with the most expectations and the best roster we've seen on paper in years, and you're going to see disappointment. And I think that people are just not going to have any buy-in. I think you could see next year, whenever we open the first time we open Mercedes-Benz, if that was the case, I would be interested to see what that crowd looks like.
Yeah,
And I'm not trying to say, you know, you guys know me. I'm with the team every game, every week, home or away. I'm with them. But that's the reality situation. Is that would be the second straight? It'd be the second straight disappointing season, because it'd be the second straight season where fans had expectations and you under delivered mightily.
On the flip side, though, 11-6, I'm riding that wave, baby. Like bring me
you're
all that.
All over that.
You know what I mean? And I don't necessarily agree that's the ceiling. And I understand where the hesitation is for some of these, you know, predictions are being made. You still wonder about, you know, the pass rush other than Judon. You still wonder about Mike Hughes at corner. There's still question marks about certain different things, right? What does this offense look like under Zach Robinson? Does it hit the ground running? Does it take time? There's question marks, and I get it. But, man, I'll be honest, 11-6,
when he's explaining why he hasn't met 11-6, that no team arguably added more this offseason than the Atlanta Falcons. That's what Jeff Kerr said on CBSSports.com.
I do want to, real quick before we get to mic'd up, I do want to ask you guys, too, the Saints ceiling, 9-8, missing the playoffs, the floor, 5-12, missing the playoffs. Give me all that, man. Give me all that.
Wow, the hatred is real.
I kind of want them to go, this is going to sound screwed up, but I kind of want them to go 9-8 and miss the playoffs because I want them to kind of keep the Carr there. And I kind of want, I don't want to see them at the top of the draft. I want to see them in that purgatory of like 12 to 18. I know I'm
not. Tell me you hate the Saints without saying
that's right, Squid
the
Billy.
Like, that's basically.
You're playing the long game. I like the way you think.
Yeah.
You know, that is some deep rooted hatred. That is some vengefulness. That is spite.
Yeah. There's definitely some petty in my heart.
That's how it is against the Ants.
I'll give Jeff Kirk credit in this article, too. He just straight up says it's hard to take them seriously with Dennis Allen as the head coach.
Yeah. Well, And that's the other thing. I think that maybe they could salvage. We could salvage another year of Dennis Allen as their head coach if they go 9-8. And that's the best case scenario for Falcons fans. So I love it. I'm here for all that.
All right, let's hit a top five.
It's time to rant.
Excuse me.
It's time to rage.
It's time for Mic'd Up
on the Morning Shift.
Brought to you by the Lexus Golden Opportunity Sales Event.
It's Top 5 Tuesday here on Mic'd Up. I'm going to give you my top five takeaways from college football week one. No, it's not week two. It was week zero when Tiffany was over there across the pond. Now it's week one. Coming off of week one, some of the craziness we did see over the weekend. All right. First of all, you guys can have all your sub lists all you want to. This is my list. So it's just straight up takeaways. This is not best teams. This is not greatest games. It's not best players. It's just takeaways. My top five biggest takeaways from college football week one. Are we ready to go?
Number five,
how about Vanderbilt? Holy crap, how about Vanderbilt? Vanderbilt Commodores with the win over Virginia Tech and playing extremely well throughout week one. I thought that was insane to watch. You talk about non-con victories, and you talk about the SEC not faring well. It seems like everybody looks over the fact that Vanderbilt rode the wave.
This is Clark Lee's vision. I think I had them 2 years ago when he had, this was the vision he had laid out, knew it was going to take a little while, knew that everybody always viewed them as the underdog. Mm. So they got off to the on the right foot with this one.
You know what's funny about this is Vatek, they packed that stadium with their fans, as most opposing teams do. In fact, guy I played with yesterday, my boy Pisano, he went up there for the weekend and was a Vatek fan.
Oh, no.
And he,
let's go party. Oh, my God, what just happened?
How about this? We start on a par five, and he pulls out his three-wood. Now, the guy can smoke his three-wood. And I said, hey, why'd you – he actually pulled out his driver, and I said, why didn't you use your driver on the first hole because you hit your three-wood so well? He goes, it was a tough weekend seeing that loss, and I didn't think he literally said, I didn't think I could hit the ball with my three-wood that early.
As a side note, thinking about that stadium, I was thinking how Tiff, when you went up there last year up to
Georgia, Vandy.
It was under construction, right?
Yes.
Have you guys seen the videos or pictures of Northwestern's stadium on the lake right now? That's just like, it's not the permanent, it's just for this year and next year, I believe, while the real stadium's being built. Insane, like right on Lake Michigan, beautiful, like sailboats in the background, all this non-permanent structures around that one. All right, let's move on.
Number four
takeaway. I got breaking news for you. Georgia is still extremely deep. A lot of people that want to kind of chisel away at Georgia's program in the offseason, they don't have Brock anymore, they don't add McConkie, they don't have all these freaking draft picks. I got bad news for everybody on that front. They're still very, very deep. We talked about Nate Frazier, Dylan Bell, Cash Jones, Robinson, Smith, Bowens, all the way down the list. Everybody that caught the freaking ball, made somebody miss, or took somebody out on the way down the field. I thought they were extremely impressive in the second half at the skill and running back positions to make people feel that pain. I thought it was awesome to watch.
So you felt like they picked up where they left off, even though they don't have a lot of pieces are gone now, right? But Georgia was able to still pull from their arsenal.
The machine rolls on.
Tiff, you said there are no rebuilding years for football factories. That's what Georgia is. 40 straight non-conference victories for that team.
All right, hit it.
Number three.
Season, I should say.
How about this one? I think we saw a matchup, possibly, of two first-round picks and or two Heisman finalists when Garrett Nussmeier and Miller Moss faced off USC against LSU. What's crazy about that is both of those programs just graduated guys that were Heisman Trophy winners and first round picks. And yet you want to talk about just reloading at the quarterback position. I know that LSU did not win. Garrett Nussmeier looks like an NFL quarterback.
We're sitting here again.
And we're sitting here again with a really good quarterback and a defense that can't make a stop when necessary. No, not the same. Not the same defense, just quite. Miller Moss, though, some of the throws he was making off balance, fade away. I mean, tight window up the seam to the tight ends and everybody else on that field. A squaring up, a matching up of two first-round quarterbacks, in my opinion, between those two guys. Great game on Sunday night.
Miller Moss is not an overly big dude either. He's 6'1", 200 pounds. I mean, he's got the height, but he got to put on about 10 pounds.
All right, Dylan, move on.
Number two.
How about this? Number two, breaking news. Florida State ain't very good, guys. Last night, that was my number two takeaway. Florida State, not very good. Got bullied by Boston College. DJU, play that sound.
And they will snap it. Not a hard cap. A sidearm lob, and it's intercepted. Max Tucker down the sideline.
Early year candidate for worst throw of the year. And I'm talking about we are in week one, and I know they've played two games. Don't have any idea what he was doing. He panicked. His first read wasn't there. He lobbed it up. Boston College takes it back the other direction. Absolutely rough.
It's been a rough go at it for DJ Uiagalelei, and I don't know where Florida State, what they decide to do from here. I mean, it's still early in the season. I know he's a guy that's bounced around a lot. It's tough. I you hate to see a kid go out there and struggle like that in his first year of school. But he's had struggles at the previous other stops that he's had. Oregon State, though, was a little bit different story. But I know Clemson, they were kind of calling for his head sometimes, too. So just tough.
Can't imagine a Florida State fan base is trying to sue someone. That seems to be their M.O. these days. Maybe they can go after DJU. I'll say this. I'm just blown away that Miami might be head and shoulders the best team in the state of Florida.
I'm glad you brought that.
Number one.
On my list is just how bad Florida is. You want to talk about Florida State being in a bad situation? The worst takeaway from college football week one to me was how bad of a situation Florida is in. And I know that Florida State is not very good right now. Here's what they do have. They know right now that they are not moving on from Mike Norvell. He just got an extension in the offseason. They at least have that. He can at least look to a number five finish a year ago and the quarterback position being injured. He can point at DJU right now. Florida? It ain't good.
Hey, at least there were no expectations for Florida coming into this year. I'm telling you right now.
Dude, they're brutal.
That was
brutal.
I didn't think Graham Mertz looked sharp. But I also didn't think he got helped. Florida receivers, other than Trey Wilson, weren't creating any separation, and at times he wasn't. But all of that said, you looked pathetic on defense. You must have been playing. It looked like they were playing 20 yards off the ball.
Yeah.
In the secondary. It was just bad.
Top five biggest takeaways for me after 1 week of college football.
Billy,
number one, Florida. You're bad, buddy.
Play the freshman.
You're bad.
It's your only hope to salvage this season. It's the only hope to salvage your job, maybe.
Well, we all went through it together. Maybe you're on the winning side. Maybe you're on the losing side of week one of college football. But a tie was had, I should say, this past weekend. So that being said, wake up call is coming up. What was the biggest moment that jumped out to you from watching college football this weekend? We want to hear your thoughts. You can give us a call at 404-726-0929. We hope to hear from you. The Wake Up Call is next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This is The Morning Show.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.